This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello, and with me, Cam Rusland, today we have Mr. Tech, Matt Armitage.
Hey, Cam, how are you?
I'm good. And we have a special honored guest, first timer. She is a journalist and a video producer, and it's Rahma Pauzi.
Hello.
And she's also young, so she's a young person.
A little bit.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm young too.
Oh.
My voice is young.
Oh, Matt. So our three topics this week. Topic number one is the future of Facebook, ? Topic number two is media literacy. And finally, topic number three will be AI and driverless cars, the future, ? So with Facebook, I am, show of hands, which really works on radio, I am a Facebook person. You are?
I'm very much a Facebook person. I love Facebook.
I know you are, Matt, or rather
I
your
am.
Cat
I've
is.
I've voted with three hands, as this is radio.
Right. But in very recently, Facebook has gotten itself into quite a lot of trouble with this Cambridge Analytica data breach, where Facebook are saying that they are innocent, if they're saying anything at all.
They are saying now Mark Zuckerberg actually broke silence to admit that they've made serious errors and right. They will change their ways forthwith.
But the thing is that this data breach happened quite some time ago and they've known about it for 2 years, but they haven't said a damn thing until now. In the stock market, their shares tumbled by about 10% in about 2 days and they lost by $70 billion or something, which they will no doubt make up. It's no big deal. But what actually might be rather concerning for Facebook is that in recent times, the uptake for new subscribers has been a lot lower than they were expecting, and that young people are even deleting their Facebook accounts and leaving the platform. So Facebook, for the last, 5 years of my life, has been rather an important cultural media driver, but perhaps its future is, perhaps it doesn't really have a long-term future. And I want to know, one, am I correct in that? But also, what are going to be the next Facebooks? What are younger people looking for in their social media world? I'm looking at you, Matt, to help me out here.
Well, the easy answer to that is that the next generation isn't here yet. So nobody knows what those social media networks are going to look like, because we're currently on the cusp of making the leap towards these kind of screenless technologies, which is the voice-activated systems like Alexa and Siri and Google Assistant. Once we adopt those hugely, that's going to point towards a very different method of communicating with people, because we're talking about operating systems that don't rely on a screen, that rely on natural language. So we don't actually have any of the apps or technology that are really going to bed in with this kind of next generation of technology, because we're not quite there yet. So we have this kind of gap where people are using services like Facebook and Snapchat and Instagram, but we haven't got to the point where we know what services will come after. Yes, we're getting a little bit jaded with these technologies, but there's no point having a new network now, because the system that it runs on has not kind of cemented itself or bedded in yet.
Okay. Rahma? Mm-hmm.
One thing that I noticed based on my young friends' use of Facebook, they've been using it almost like Instagram, Insta Story, or Snapchat, because I think we've seen that there's, among the teenagers, they don't really want to see what they posted 2 years ago. They don't really want to see whatever that they posted like 10 years ago. And that's why, medium like Snapchat or Insta Story becomes very appealing.
Because with those, the stories disappeared.
Exactly. The story disappeared. So utilizing that kind of method, social media use, I noticed a lot of my friends, I've been like posting something on Facebook, end up deleting it, posting something very emotional, end up deleting it. They just want to like let it out there. They almost treat it almost like how we use Twitter, except that Twitter, because it goes by, right? People don't really see it on their newsfeed throughout the entire day. And I thought that's really interesting. Maybe there's like no such thing as an archived memory that's really needed, either for the teenagers because of the age that they're in, or maybe it's just like a new generation of looking at things that's like 20 years ago, like 20 years before that was not long time ago, but for my generation, at least, like 5 years ago was considered like a really long time ago. Yeah. Like even last year was considered really long time ago. So I'm guessing that we are probably moving towards like a much more instantaneous, like, you know, like a much more current way of utilizing social media.
Where the content disappears. We cannot at some future date be prosecuted for something we did or said earlier on.
No.
Really?
Yeah, because that content doesn't disappear. It only disappears in terms of you think it disappears. It's still been uploaded to a server. There will still be a digital fingerprint of it. It hasn't self-destructed. I mean, this is why people get into problems with things like Snapchat and sending, for example, naked photos. Mm-hmm. Because all that somebody needs to do is, with another phone or a camera, take a picture of that screenshot. You know, this idea that information just disappears is a fallacy. If you're uploading things to a server, you're uploading things to the internet, things are going to exist. One of the things that came out today is with the blockchain, so Bitcoin. It's been found that images of child pornography have been embedded into the metadata of the blockchain. So that means that anybody who possesses any Bitcoin could potentially be in possession of child pornography. So you have to be really, really careful with all this technology. Never assume that information is going to cease to exist. It doesn't.
But then wouldn't that be then a moving forward, a demand that people are going to make that demand? I mean, we old timers, when we first jumped in, we didn't know, we didn't care. Yeah. But the people, can they not demand that they're...
No, they can't, because you're not paying for the service. You're not paying for Snapchat. You're not paying for Facebook. You're not paying for Instagram. You're giving information to a company that looks at your data, archives your data, aggregates that data, and sells that information onto marketing companies. That's the model that we've chosen as consumers for these services. We don't want to pay for them, therefore Facebook has to do something else to make money. Instagram has to do something else to make money. And don't forget, Instagram is Facebook. WhatsApp is Facebook.
Yeah. Right.
When we talk about Facebook disappearing, no, Facebook, the social network, may disappear, but that doesn't mean that Facebook, the company, is going to disappear, because Facebook is a data organization. Okay. It's not a social network.
Well, we must move on, though, to topic number two, but I just want to finish with a phrase that I've been saying a lot in light of Facebook's Cambridge Analytica trouble, which is that if the product is free, then you are the product.
Yeah, that's a really good point. It's the difference between being a consumer and a customer. We are not customers of Facebook. People like Cambridge Analytica are the customers of Facebook. We are the consumers and the users of Facebook, and that's a very, very different relationship.
Although, to be fair, though, in the case of Cambridge Analytica, the story is that they stole that information.
No, they didn't steal it. They took more information than they were supposed to. They were granted access. There was no illegal access to the system. There was an illegal gathering of data. And those two things are quite different, and they're covered under the terms and conditions that Facebook gives to these people, but they are given access to the entire system. And Facebook obviously was not monitoring what was being taken out. So when you talk about legality and illegality, that's actually a very gray area. That's one of the reasons that Mark Zuckerberg is saying that he's quite open to new legislation coming in, because that will codify his position and actually reinforce the position of companies like Facebook.
Okay, so terms and conditions, that's the bit where it's just, I agree.
We just don't care.
Yeah, exactly.
So, Rahma, media literacy, media literacy.
Yes, media literacy. So, this is probably somewhat connected, but not necessarily connected. I just would like to bring in the topic about how we are teaching media literacy and critical literacy to these kids that are growing up who already possess phone by the time, like, they're 2 years old, by the time they can, like, start enjoying, you know, moving images, the first thing that they're going to be fed with, which brings me to a point, is which, like, why do we always, why technology always precedes us, then only we just come to terms about, like, how do we learn about these things? For example, like, with you talking about Facebook just now, like, I've been on Facebook for about 11 years now. I've had Facebook when I was 17. I think, like, at the core of it, like, I've always wondered, when I was like 20, I've always wondered, like, why there's no proper education about social media network that's given to me? Why do I have to learn about these things on my own? And why nobody told me that all these messages are codified, all these messages are prepped for me. All these things are constructed. It's not necessarily just completely truthful portrayal of an external reality that I could just like learn, you know? So I just think that, how do we tackle that? How do we teach kids to be mindful of these messages that they receive right. through social media networking?
First of all, you're not as young as I thought you were. Okay. But anyway, I would wonder if actually what you're really saying is, how do we old timers, because I'm going to include you now, Rahma, as an old person, educate ourselves, because the young people, if they're given these things, adapt and learn as they go along.
But if I understand you, you're not talking about so much how these things are used, but what are the rules and the etiquette and the mores governing
yeah.
them?
And also yeah. why... So maybe education has to move a little bit into including people who are actively being the consumers of these gadgets as young as, like, you know, when they are teenagers. Like,
so how do we spot lies, fake news...
Exactly.
But also
from such a young age.
Yeah, and what is the code of ethics? What is the code of manners? What is the whole kind of morality around conducting your online life?
Is this a first time thing in the history of mankind? When Gutenberg created the printing press, or when newspapers became mass, or when the telegraph started working?
No, it's not. It's exactly the same. I mean, I'm not a social anthropologist. I wish I was, because then I'd be able to answer this more fully. But all of these leaps in technology lead to these kind of... gaps in terms of our social and ethical behavior, and it takes society one or two generations usually to catch up. When we got the printing press, it was quite normal for fake news to be posted around villages and towns. That was one of the first things that happened. Misinformation came out as quickly or even faster than the real information. This is always something that's happened throughout society, and the answer to your question is not a nice one. The answer is really that generation is going to have to define that for itself. There's not going to be somebody in authority saying, this is how you should behave. They're going to have to find that path and find that balance for themselves. And unfortunately, and I've had this conversation with my own sort of nieces and nephews in the UK as well, it does lead to there being almost a lost generation, a generation that gets left behind.
And that's my issue, because like with the printing press, it probably took like 20 years for us to come to terms about like the impact
of
this media.
If you look at the way that technology was adopted then, you're probably looking at 100 years rather than 20 years. I mean, you know, it took a lot longer for technologies even to spread across countries and across borders.
How do we deal with nowadays technology when things are being churned out like a lot quicker?
Fortunately, we live in Malaysia, right? We are so much more advanced than anyone else. We are having a law that's coming out governing fake news, where we were able to say, you know, you can't talk about that because that's fake news. I mean, isn't that the answer? Surely.
Silence from I mean, it is unfortunate. Whenever there is a leap in technology, some people get left behind. It's not nice to say. It's not pleasant. There are a lot of people sitting in offices who are just finishing school, who've just started their careers, and all they know is uncertainty.
But they know that they have uncertainty. I mean,
know that they have uncertainty, yes, yeah. But that generation is going to maintain that sense of uncertainty, whereas the generation that comes after them isn't going to have that sense of uncertainty, because there will be more fixed positions for them to anchor themselves to. So when you
will they not retreat into smaller zones where they feel very comfortable that the truth in their particular community, their zone, is the truth, and
yes,
let's just forget about everyone else?
But that's why I said in a sense that it's kind of a lost generation. There's not really a lot you can do to help that generation.
Matt, you're always a ray of sunshine.
No, because if you look at our generation, we had the certainty of you'd be in the same career for a long time, possibly most of your working life. You could trust most media organizations. You had this certainty in these pillars in your life. You knew that you were probably going to buy a house. You were going to have a family. When you ask somebody who's in the range of sort of 20 to 25 those questions now, their answer is generally, I don't know. It's not that they don't want those things. They just don't know how they're going to obtain them.
Let's ask one, Rahma. Do you have a sense of uncertainty?
I think I do have a sense of uncertainty, and I think I'm very comfortable with it. And I think that's like the way we roll nowadays. And in fact, certainty kind of like makes me feel like I'm stuck in one place, and maybe certainty is the, you know, uncertainty is the new black. Like, you have to you have to embrace it, and maybe that's like the way we roll. But I guess, like, the takeaway for this, like, my recommendation that I would like to put out there is that try to include education about media messaging to students, to younger generation, about the impacts and the socio-political impacts of all the messages that you put out there. And try to also include the younger generation in this voice, because I think right now we are churning technology out much quicker than we've always been.
I mean, I agree with you, but I would say that there's a certain issue there, because the people doing the teaching know less than the people they're teaching
to.
And that's the problem. That's why I say that the rules for this are actually going to come from the people who are experiencing it. So once we actually get those columns and those pillars in place, then that information can be passed down to future generations. And we're not at that point yet. If you've got me or Cam in a room telling a bunch of teenagers how to conduct their lives on... Exactly, you're laughing, because the idea of it is ridiculous. And of course it's ridiculous, because we can't do that. If I say to Cam, how does a VPN work?
Yeah, all right. Don't embarrass me in public.
Ask you how a VPN works.
Vinyl? Okay, I couldn't be bothered to find out. What's your point?
No, but the point is that people like us cannot be the teachers when it comes to this kind of information.
So therefore, Matt, if you're talking about a lost generation, if the future generations are going to work it out themselves and are adapting, as Rahma is saying, the lost generation you're talking about is you and me, Matt.
No, we're not the lost generation.
We are the lost generation.
No, because we're the generation of certainty. And there is always that uncertainty when we make these technological leaps. We get back to certainty. And this is just something that's repeated through history. Mm-hmm. You can go back and look at the examples. We will get back to certainty. Mm-hmm. And your generation will also adapt to those situations of certainty. But you're the ones who are feeling the uncertainty now.
All right. Rahma, your final feeling is, after having heard these old-timers speak?
I stand by my point that conversations are endless. And I think multi-generational conversations should happen throughout history. Like, I think you cannot keep excluding people who are actually affected by technology. And I think that's what we have to do right now, moving on.
Okay. Well, I'm on yours. I'm with the kids, Rahma. I'm with you people.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you so
not old times like Matt. His uncertainty. But in a moment, he's going to give us yet more uncertainty when we talk about AI, artificial intelligence. I know what it means, Matt.
Good.
Here on A Bit of Culture, BFM 89.9. And we're back with myself, Cam Ruslan, Rahma Pauzi, and Matt Armitage, who is now going to talk about AI and driverless cars.
So I want to talk about the incident that happened with Uber recently, where one of their autonomous cars ran over and killed a pedestrian in Tempe in Arizona. I don't really know how to pronounce that. So there was actually a human being, a human operator inside the car, but he failed in his goal of taking over the use of the car. Now, the car hit the woman at about 40 miles an hour. Ouch. Because it was a Volvo SUV. It did a fair amount of damage, because you hit anyone with 2 tons of metal at any speed, it's not going to work out very nicely. Arizona is one of the states that has been very proactive in allowing companies like Uber to get autonomous vehicles on the road. Now, this one had a driver behind it. They also allow vehicles on the road that are completely without a human operator. For Uber, this obviously is the future of their business model, as their previous CEO has been on record saying the most expensive part of your Uber journey is the driver. So it's always been part of Uber's business plan to get rid of the driver and have all of these autonomous vehicles. And of course, a lot of other companies are doing it. Google is looking at systems for this. Volvo is also looking at systems. You know, all the main manufacturers are doing this. There are very good reasons for doing it. It's as we find sort of increasing gridlock in our communities and cities, self-driving cars are actually one way of making the roads more efficient, because the cars can all communicate with one another. And one of the main reasons that our cities are gridlocked is because human beings are a bit of a nightmare. You know, we tend to be selfish. We tend not to think about the other drivers. So it's actually generally us who are causing the chaos, because if you have a completely autonomous system, you don't need traffic lights, because every car negotiates its own system.
But this killing a person, I mean, that's put a spanner in the works, isn't it?
Well, this is the first time that an autonomous car has actually killed someone. It's not the first time somebody has been killed in a car that has been driving autonomously. A similar thing happened in a Tesla a few years ago. The guy was using the autopilot mode, and the autopilot didn't notice that a very large truck had pulled across the road and just plowed straight into it. So these systems are very, very good. They are very, very clever.
But they're way off being ready.
But they're way off being ready.
And not just a little bit off. They are way off.
No, and I think this goes through to artificial intelligence in general. Okay. You know, we hear a lot of talk about AI taking over our lives and starting to govern our societies.
Yeah.
But really, artificial intelligence at the moment is very, very stupid. They're very, very clever computers, but this is like an analogy I've used a few times. Artificial intelligence is kind of like a 7-year-old boy who knows absolutely everything about dinosaurs and absolutely nothing about anything else. And this is kind of the position that we find ourselves in.
But they're
in
learning, aren't they?
Yeah.
They are learning, yes. They're learning very, very quickly. But we're putting them into a lot of very strong positions at the moment. Like a lot of our financial transactions are governed by AI and intelligence. When we saw a few weeks ago, there was a huge dip in the market in the Dow Jones. Part of that was because the transactions are governed by AI. And when the AIs saw competing AIs selling off, they all started to sell off against each other. So there wasn't necessarily a reason for it. They were analyzing the data and seeing that other machines were selling off.
It creates an automatic run.
Well, BFM's a business radio station, but I'm prepared to say that that's just pretty much the stock market all around. It's just kind of
it is, but now it can
blind
happen.
Blind leading the blind.
Yeah, now it can happen a lot faster, and it doesn't actually involve human beings.
Well, Rahma.
Yeah, but Matt, allow me to play in devil's advocate right here.
Please,
but I know this is not fair, but what would you say if someone would say that that is the cost that you'd have to pay when you want to advance? Like, you know, for an AI to be great for like 100 years, you would have to allow like 30 years in which it's going to do like miserable stuff, like killing people and do all this. But the moment you pass through that, maybe after that, that's how it's learned how to become better.
Absolutely.
Society.
I agree with you. People must die. Not people must die. This is kind of a mark, again, of adopting any kind of new technology. You will make mistakes with that new technology.
Yeah, no, but it can make a mistake in a empty car park for the next 20 years.
No, absolutely. I mean, that's why I'm saying that perhaps these systems shouldn't be on the road yet. We should be testing these things, and there should be a lot more human monitoring, and we shouldn't place so much trust in these systems.
Trust or fear, surely.
They're kind of two halves of the same coin. I mean, a lot of people, including people like Elon Musk and Stephen Hawking, have said that AI poses the greatest existential threat to humanity that has come out in, you know, hundreds or thousands of years. Mm. I don't agree with that. I don't think that AI does pose that kind of threat to us. What I do think is that at the moment we have what are basically really advanced pocket calculators, not what we consider to be an artificial intelligence. Mm. When we say AI, when we talk about these machines like DeepMind and Deep Blue and all of these things, we imagine that these things are really, really intelligent, but they don't have the ability to process laterally like a human being does. They can process an awful lot of information.
Well, yeah, and I'm happy with that. As long as if they have enough processing power to vacuum my floor, I'm very happy.
And if they can,
that's enough.
Yeah,
that's enough.
And if they can,
I'm dazzled by that. Sliding doors. That gets me every time.
But the issue is that the machine that can beat you at poker isn't the machine that knows how to vacuum your floors. At the moment, we still need a different set of intelligence for every situation. Whereas when you look at a human being can go into multiple situations.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We don't need them to be that. We do
because when you talk about a car, for example, you do many, many tasks. I mean, one of the reasons that we don't have humanoid robots is because standing on two legs and walking is one of the most complicated things.
But I've been watching videos that are physics. Happening. Yeah. So, Rahma, you're younger than Matt and myself. Do you see your life when you come to our age being filled with driverless cars? And
I think I would be surrounded with driverless cars.
And you're going to be okay with that.
Yeah, I think I'm going to be okay with it. In fact, I'm going to be really happy being able to like work on something else during my 1 hour commute to BFM. Granted, I'm still working at BFM at that time. And I think it's completely okay. It's very unfortunate that that has happened, but I guess we have to keep talking throughout, like minimizing errors. But then, like, how can we know if our cars could err if there's no errors that took place in the first place?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I don't disagree with you, but the thing with systems like autonomous cars on, it only works if every single vehicle on the road is an autonomous car. If you have one that isn't, that throws the entire system out.
So maybe advancement first then.
Yeah. Okay, so Matt, in conclusion, you're kind of like, you're saying, steady on, everybody. It's okay. It's not going to be here tomorrow, but
yeah,
soon.
No, I'm saying that the AI is not as clever as we, and not as able as we give it credit for at the moment. So it will be, and it will be able to do all of those things that you said you want to do. I don't want to drive a car. I want an AI to do my job as well. I don't want to have to work. All of these things AI can do for us. But we have to recognize the fact that it's not there yet. It's a long way from being there yet.
So anyway, now though, we move to the final part of the show, recommendations, where we recommend something you think might be of interest, and I go first. My recommendation is something that I've been enjoying doing for the last week or so. I've kind of like lost interest in Facebook. It's sort of like, I mean, I love seeing pictures of your cat, Matt. I love it.
I haven't even posted many. I think I've...
Oh, yeah.
I have the cat.
Go check out Matt Armitage on Facebook. He has a cat. But Twitter, on the other hand, I'm really getting into Twitter, and I never say anything because the internet is toxic, and I don't want to get involved. But what's really fun is, and this is my recommendation, folks, go out there and see if you can spot Russian bots.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So you put a hashtag, which is something that they would be interested in, some American thing like Never Again or MAGA, Make American Great Again, or something like that, and then just see if you can spot the sheer craziness. I haven't fully worked it out. One of the things I think that happens is that they work on, I think they get to work at around 9 or 10 a.m. Moscow time. So you find it gets pretty quiet, and then suddenly there's like crazies and other things as well. Spelling is odd. Punctuation is peculiar. But I might be completely wrong. But it's a fun thing to do for whole family.
I can actually agree with that, because when I do post my cat pictures, I also put Russian hashtags on them as well.
Oh, really?
And I've got loads of Russian bots following me. Yeah. Quite amazing. Yeah. Okay. Really weird and wonderful. Lots of pictures of Russian churches and Orthodox crosses and things like that. It's wonderful.
Oh, okay, cool. All right. So that's my recommendation. Find a Russian bot. Rahma, what's yours?
Mine is probably rather boring, but I would like to insist that it's not. Try to pick up Paulo Freire, Pedagogy of the Oppressed, talking about media literacy and how can we include the younger generation in talking about how the media is being shaped and how do you direct all these messages to other people. So,
wow, okay. Paulo Freire, aren't those sort of like crunchy chocolate things that we hand out in Harry Raya?
Yes, Ambassador, you are spoiling us with your...
Yeah. Who again?
So Paulo Freire is an educator from Brazil, and he was one of the first teachers, in fact, to realize that there's actually like a huge gap in between, in education between classes. So the moment you're not including the reality of other classes, then that's when you are going to widen this gap even more. So that's when the poor people wouldn't be able to understand, why are these things being taught to me? Mm. I don't understand, why do we need to be counting apples when I have bananas in Malaysia, for example. So, I mean, it's little things like that, but then like it makes you think that, you know, education has to go both ways, and it's multi-generational and multi-classes. So,
all right. Okay, so that's Paulo Freire. Not just a great gift at Hari Raya when you're visiting your uncle. He's also an intellectual from Brazil. Matt, what's your recommendation?
Well, I kind of hate to say this now after that. I'm recommending a TV show that showed on RTE and in Ireland and Channel 4 in the UK called Young Offenders. It's a comedy about two 15-year-old schoolboys who are possibly the most stupid people who have ever been born, and the ridiculous scrapes they get up to. It is one of the funniest and possibly most disgusting and obscene TV shows I've ever seen. So if you're into the idea of old ladies flashing you and hammers falling on people's heads, stealing a giant tuna and dragging it along the bed of a polluted river, then it's precisely the show for you.
Young Offenders.
Young Offenders.
I've seen a clip and it was funny. Very hard to understand. They speak Irish.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The accents are very hard. You might want to put subtitles on. And I'm saying that as an English guy. But I was crying with laughter on the sofa. And, you know, if you're the kind of person who likes shows like The Office or Inbetweeners, where you've got your head in your hands.
I love the Inbetweeners.
This is like Inbetweeners to the power of 10. You are behind a cushion and chewing on the cushion. I mean, it's funny, but it's awful.
Okay, yeah. I'll check it out. The bit that I saw, the performances were really good. I mean, it didn't look like they were acting, just like...
Oh, no, no.
Like
I mean,
they're real documentary.
Yeah, it looks like a mockumentary-style thing. Yeah.
Okay, really so that's funny. Young Offenders.
Young Offenders.
Oh, check it out. So, that brings us to the end of this week's show, and it only remains me now to thank Matt Armitage.
Thank you.
And special honoured guest, Rahma Pauzi.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for being here. With your youth and insights on such things as that. I've no idea what young people do these days. So it's great to meet one. And myself, Cam Raslan, and please join us next week for another exciting episode of A Bit of Culture here on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.